10 years from today, Lisa Snyder will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs and the small dogs who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And we are also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at Underdog Fantasy with promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in the Best Ball Mania 2 contest for a chance to win $1 million. That's UnderdogFantasy.com. And of course, while you're downloading apps, do not forget to download the SGPN app in either the App Store or the Google Play Store. It's available for you today, and you can get all of our picks and podcasts right in the palm of your hand. Once again, that's the SGPN app, wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And I'm back. Jeff Fox is back. Hallelujah. I returned from my unspecified off-the-grid location, and I am back in your degenerate ear holes. I hope you all didn't miss me too much. I'd like to thank, once again, Kurt Chase Patrick for filling in for me. He did a fantastic job. Only complaints was he was far too civil to Mr. Gumby Vreeland, the co-host, so I'm going to make sure I take care of that this week. We have some abuse to that has been building up over my vacation. So once again, welcome to the podcast. This is episode number 57, and it's going to be dedicated to two players from my beloved Montreal Expos. Well, they're my second favorite team back in the day, but 57, big unit, Randy Johnson, and 57, the kid, Gary Carter. So this goes out to those Montreal Expos. Thank you all for tuning in. If you're listening to us on our MMA Gambling Podcast feed, great job. That's what we've been instructing you to do. If you are listening to us in the SGPN feed, if you can find our dedicated feed and subscribe and listen to us on there going forward, that would be great. And if you want to rate, review, all that jazz that people always tell you to do, that would be great too. Now, as for my aforementioned co-host, let's get him on the podcast so I can make fun of him for picking Montserrat Conejo 2 weeks ago or last week when he obviously knew she wasn't going to win. This would be the toughest man in your ear holes is what I guess I'll call him, and the baddest purple belt on the planet. It would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hi, Dan. I'm back.
So I did recognize that it was a objectively a bad pick while I was doing it. But I will say, you know, she did what I expected her to, which was to rush forward and pressure. She just never got to the point where she was holding on to Amanda Lemos. Because it turns out Amanda Lemos hits really fucking hard.
Yes. Yeah, so we messed up. I forgot to identify Malcolm Gordon as being Canadian, and so of course he screwed us over, because I don't think there's a way around the Canadian screwing us over. If we pick them, they're going to lose. If we don't pick them, they're going to win. So I guess identifying is not really going to help us in that case. So, but regardless, just want to mention I was 9-1, Dan was 8-2, which is basically, I would like every week to go like that, me beating you but both of us doing very well. I think that would be it would be the sweet spot for me on the podcast. So So where have you been looking for your abuse in the week that I've been off the air? Like at your family, at home, or is there like work or online? Where have you been getting the abuse you usually get from me?
I mean, typically if you write enough about MMA and your thoughts go on Twitter, you get plenty of abuse there.
Okay, good.
I said something one time about Sean O'Malley's stock going down because of his fight with Chris Moutinho. And I didn't mean that, like, people would be written off on Sean O'Malley or that Sean O'Malley's not still good at prospect. But, like, you know, he's lauded as this guy who's got this, like, one-touch power and is incredible and nobody can take his punches. And somebody took about 200 of that bastard's punches and was still moving pretty good. So I just said something about his stock going down and Moutinho's stock going up despite the outcome of the fight, and I took a lot of hate for that, so that pretty much carried me over until your return.
Did you see his sweet tattoo he just got, Sean O'Malley?
I've seen it. Yep.
I don't... Takeshi 6ix9ine gave him a 6ix9ine tattoo on his shoulder. It's cool because Takeshi 6ix9ine's a cool guy. He's been busted for child pornography and racketeering and weapons and drugs charges. He's a cool dude. So. Glad Sean O'Malley's got people like that in his corner. That's good to hear. Come at me with the hate, Sean O'Malley.
I also don't know what's lamer than having another man tattoo his name on you.
That's true.
Some real prison stuff, dude.
I was gonna say that happened in prison. Maybe that's where Mr. 6ix9ine learned that.
Mr. 6ix9ine.
In prison. I think that's where. Yeah, I think that's how I have to refer to him as to be respectful. And not to bury the lead here, the biggest news story of the week I saw on a news – this is a legit MMA news site. I won't name the site, but I sent it to Dan already. A couple of days ago the headline was Holly Holm gets a sunburn and it looks painful. So I want your reaction to that, Dan. I know it's kind of shocking and it's hard to talk about things like this, but what are your initial thoughts on that?
The hard-hitting pieces that you've been meaning to cover and just haven't gotten the time. But, yeah, I would say the fact that the palest MMA fighter on the planet next to maybe Alex Morano is probably the only paler MMA fighter out there. So the fact that the second palest MMA fighter in the world got a sunburn seems like you could probably just gloss over that one and call it a day.
But, hey, guess who clicked on it? Because I'm like, well, I got to see the sunburn now. It must be something special. But, no, it's just a normal sunburn.
It's your run-of-the-mill sunburn. It looked like a pretty bad sunburn. But, like, like it didn't look like, you know, like her skin wasn't bubbling or anything.
No. It's this MMA, folks. We're used to a lot worse than that. Like I said, I'm not naming the site, but that's a legit article. But hey, it worked because, like I said, I clicked on it, and now I've mentioned it to all you people, so you're all probably gonna Google Holly Holm and sunburn. So I think that was the biggest hard hitting news story of the week that we have to cover before we dive into our exciting. Oh, I know what I was gonna ask you. It's not gruesome enough to go on your phone, right?
What
sunburn?
Oh, no, sunburn doesn't make it on there. Not even close.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure. Okay, good. All right, we're going to actually break down some fights for y'all this week. UFC and ESPN, Sanhagen versus Dillashaw. First, let me tell you about WynnBET. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Join us. Promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. All right. So we got this one. I didn't mention, but if you haven't listened before, I run MMA-manifesto.com, the MMA site. Dan writes for it also, and I rate fight cards based on how strong they are on paper, based on how strong the fighters are in terms of record and stuff like that. So UFC and ESPN San Diego versus Dillashaw rates very high. It's a very good fight card. The main event's one of the best, like, one of my highest rated main events we've had since we had a title fight on. I think we had a Figueiredo. Did we have Figueiredo Benavides on a fight night? I think we did.
I imagine that was a fight night. Yeah.
I think the first one was. So anyhow, this is a very good card with a very strong main event. So it is, like I said, UFC and ESPN Sanhagen versus Dillashaw, aka UFC and ESPN 27, aka UFC Vegas 32, which is probably what I'll be using for most of my articles. It is, as the title suggests, on ESPN. Main card ESPN, ESPN Plus at 7 Eastern, and prelims also on ESPN, ESPN Plus at 4 o'clock Eastern. So a nice early start time, not a massive fight card either, but UFC will find a way, just like last weekend. What, there was 7 finishes or something, right? At Makhachev versus Moises out of
eight out of 10.
Okay, so there's 10 fights, which is way less than normal. 8 of them were finishes, and still somehow it was like well over 5 hours of programming, which is just drives me nuts. There's no reason to, like, other sports don't do this. You don't, like, if a baseball game ends early, it ends early. That's just the way it goes. You don't drag it out with a bunch of fluff in the middle of it. So anyhow, that's my rant. But I don't watch these things live anyhow, so I just skip through all that crap. But still, hopefully this one's a nice quick one. Starting at 4 is nice, though. And let's kick things off, shall we, with the prelims. Diana, is it Balbida or Balbicha?
I think it's Balbida.
Balbida. I thought since she's Romanian, it might be something special. So she's fighting Hannah Goldie. Now, first of all, Balbida is, I've realized, secretly Canadian. Did you know that?
She trains in Canada with Kyle Nelson. Yeah. I did know that. Yes.
She trains. That was the city I was born in, Stoney Creek, Ontario. I lived my first 6 months of my life, so that's where she trained. So, no, like I said, I don't think there's a way to get around Canadian screwing us here. So I guess we just go ahead here. If we pick her, she's going to lose. If we pick Hannah Goldie, Balbida's going to win. So that's just the way she goes. So let's break her down. Balbida is the warrior princess, and Goldie is 24K. I think I like 24K better because the play on the last name.
I'm going to throw it up to I'm going to pick the Warrior Princess in this one as a tribute to Xena from the 1990s.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I think this is the second time Xena's come up on this podcast.
It's quite possible. Also, I will throw this to you. So you said the play on the last name. Do you know her last name is not Goldie?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Her real last name is Goldschmidt. Which I knew when she was on the regional scene, they actually used her full name, Hannah Goldschmidt, a couple of times, including a win over Jillian Robertson. And I thought it was like a completely different person when she appeared on the Contender Series. And then like I saw her come out and I was like, "What? Whoa, there wouldn't be a Hannah Goldie and a Hannah Goldschmidt that happened to look that much
older." Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know if she's just hiding that last name for some reason. It's like the old Hollywood thing where you didn't want your last name to sound Jewish, but like I feel like the times have changed enough. You could be a Jewish MMA fighter. Like,
you'd hope so, yes. But yeah, I don't approve. I say go with your last name. This happens when women fighters get married too. Sometimes it gets confusing. Like, what, is this the same person or not? Because if they take the their husband's last name, things can get confusing when they're trying to be like
Montana Stewart. Do you know Montana Stewart? Well,
Yes, exactly. Montana De La Rosa. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, all right, enough of aside here. This is the show of asides. We talk in brackets, I think, pretty much the whole show. All right, Warrior Princess, 13-6, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. All of her losses are via submission. She's 0-2 in the UFC, and she lost her last fight via submission. Imagine that. That was way back, though, in July. Actually, not all her losses. Excuse me. 4 of her 6 losses are via submission. So, and 1 of the 2 in the UFC. So her last loss was a submission loss, but it was way back last July. So she's been out a year almost exactly. She was previously a flyweight. This fight will be at strawweight. Has she fought strawweight before? Do you know off the top of your head?
For Balbida, I think she may have, like, very early in her career, but not in some time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering about the weight cut and whatnot. Okay.
She actually used to fight bantamweight way back when.
Really? All right. Well, you may want to keep an eye on betting on this one until you get to the actual weigh-ins on Friday morning or around lunchtime or so, usually Eastern time, and see how she looks in the scale, see if she makes weight. Fighters who have missed weight have only won 38% of the time in the past year and a half, so it's something to keep in mind. But and she will definitely be the larger fighter here, even if she does come in on weight, because she's got 3 inches of height, 7 inches reach. She's also 4 years younger. Grappling stats in her favor. She's plus 100, and she's training out of my birth city, so that's something to keep in mind. Goldie, or Goldschmidt, 5-1 with 1 knockout. She's never been finished in a fight. She is 0-1 in the UFC, so that was her only career loss. She was 1-0 in the Contender Series before she got into the UFC. Striking and active striking stats in her favor, but it's only about 2 fights for each of these women, so it's not a huge sample size. She's at minus 125. I'm wavering on a lot of my picks on this card. I was going to mention that before we head into it. I found this card a hard one to handicap, but I read a really great article on the Warrior Princess today on MMA-Manifesto.com. So, and the guy who picks who writes those columns for me. His record's fantastic for picking people. So at least for that column, they're not so good at other places, I hear. But anyhow, I'm going to go with her.
Yeah, I'm going to obviously go with Deanna Belvita too. Look, I was pretty high on Hannah Goldie when they signed her off the Contender Series, but the more I watch her, especially if you go back and watch that Miranda Granger fight where she just got blasted on the feet, is that she seems to have trouble with reach. She also didn't do well in the clinch against Miranda Granger, and Miranda Granger is very much an 115-pounder. So for Hannah Goldie to have a lot of trouble with her, and yeah, she's fighting Belvita, not only somebody who is going to be much longer, going to be much bigger, going to be much stronger coming down from 125, right, formerly 135, but she's also really great in the clinch. Like, if you watch Daniela, or it's Deanna Belvita.
She can change her name.
Yeah.
Her Deanna, name is Daniela Belvita.
So Deanna Belvita did a really great job of keeping Leanna Jojua up against the cage in that fight. And Jojua is a really strong fighter at flyweight in her own right. So for Belvita to put her up against the cage that many times, to have really good clinch work, her underhooks were great, her body lock was great, her body lock takedown was great, because she even took Jojua down. She just got caught in a submission when she got there. And I just don't see Goldie as being the type of person who's going to catch her with a submission. And if that's true, like, I think the position battle is going to be won by Belvita here, and I think that's enough here to probably win her a pretty easy decision.
Yeah, you don't see 7-inch reach advantages very often. You know, like, that's pretty huge.
Yeah, that's a lot. And like I said before, if you look at Hannah Goldie's last fight, part of her problem was the length and boxing of Miranda Granger. Right, like, she just picked her apart from distance because Granger is also very long. So now she's going to be fighting somebody else who's also very long. I think these odds are way too close, and they even favor, you know, Goldie in this fight. So I think, you know, these odds are way off considering that huge size discrepancy.
There you go. So Daniela Belvita is the pick. Once we're done recording, I'll make the 40-minute drive or so down to her gym, and I'll let her know that she has now been renamed thanks to Gumby. So, all right. Before we move on, did you find this card hard to handicap also? I see I've got a lot of question marks beside my name for a lot of my picks. Or was this, like, Makhachev versus Moises was very straightforward for us, and it turned out great. This one I'm finding a lot harder to make picks on.
There's a couple I've wavered on back and forth, but I think, like, my initial instinct on all of them is where I'm going. So I didn't manage to talk myself out of any of them, but there were ones I had to see if I was going to talk myself out of.
Okay. If that makes sense to anyone, okay. We'll move on. Women's flyweight. Sajara Eubanks, her nickname is Sarge with the J, and she's fighting Elise Reed, who has no nickname, so Sarge, you win. Reed will be making her debut, and this is short notice. I believe she just fought back in May also on the regional scene. She is 4-0 as a pro, 2 knockouts. 7 years younger than Eubanks. Like I said, this is your debut, short notice. I don't have much else to tell you other than that. She's only had 4 fights. None of them, I don't think any of them were even in big promotions either.
CFFC is a pretty big promotion.
Yeah, it's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're a big one.
Yeah. So anyhow, she's really inexperienced at this point, but has fought on CFFC, is true. Plus 240 is what you get for her. Eubanks, 6-6, 2 knockouts, never been finished in a fight. 4-4 in the UFC. She's lost her last 2 fights. She was 3-0 on Tough and then missed out on the fighting for the championship. Was it weight cut, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was weight cut, which is interesting, too, because this one's going back to flyweight. So, you know, we talked about Belvita having trouble with weight with a question mark. This might be it, too.
Yeah, very true. So 3-0 on Tough. She was 2-1 in Invicta also. She also is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu world champion. I didn't really know that until I dug more into it. But, yeah, she's been in a bunch of competitions, got a bunch of medals, including a gold. She's 1 inch taller, 5 inches of reach, minus 325. Not crazy about the number, but I think I'll take Sarge in this, unless you've got some really awesome intel on Reed, who I'm sure you've seen fight all 4 times that she's fought. As a pro.
3 of the 4 times as a pro, actually. Oh, yeah. I didn't see her Bellator fight, awkwardly enough.
What? Of all the fights?
Yeah, I did see her 3 in CFFC. if I'm not mistaken, the one in Bellator was against, oh man, I can't remember, there was some silly story about the person she was fighting there, but now I can't remember. CFFC, though.
Great Bellator-esque, though.
Yeah, oh, she might have been a porn star. Was she a porn star? She might have been
There's
a porn star.
Really going on.
Yeah, it might have been that. Yeah, because, I mean, like, they always seem to sign somebody with, like, some, she was a stripper
Rebecca
or something
Brigman.
Like
that. Does Rebecca Brigman mean anything? Is she in any of the movies that you watch?
I don't know. I don't.
You know that name?
But I'm sure if she was a porn star, I'm sure she wouldn't be using that name.
Yeah,
but yeah,
Rebecca Starr Brigman is her real name.
Oh, okay.
Starr.
Maybe
she's Rebecca Starr.
Yeah.
I don't want to Google too much here.
I'm almost positive there's some kind of funny story with Elise Reed's first opponent. But
okay.
I watched her other three fights, and they're all against good opponents, too. Jasmine Jesus DeVicious is going to be on the Contender Series this year. She's exceptionally good. I actually think Jesus DeVicious beat Reed in that fight. Jillian DeCourcy's pretty tough. Hillary Rose was already on the Contender Series. So in four fights, she has racked up some pretty decent experience in those times. But here's what I'll say. Hillary Rose, who I largely saw as I was ready for her to get absolutely whooped on the Contender Series, and that's exactly what happened. Cheyenne Bays beat the hell out of her. She had Reed in some really bad positions. It looked like there might be a couple of times where Hillary Rose was going to win that fight by submission. And to me, if you're having trouble with Hillary Rose, who's really an 115-pounder, and now you're going to fight Sajara Eubanks on short notice up at 125. Her grappling and strength is just going to be so much better in this case. She's going to put her in those bad positions. I actually think that the number doesn't really scare me off on this one. Negative 325 is probably still not high enough on Sajara Eubanks.
Okay, good. So we're both picking Eubanks. Yeah, Reed, actually, her last fight was for the strawweight title, I see, in CFFC, so she's a former champion, but yeah, this is quite a step up. I'm not huge on Eubanks, but I think she gets the job done here also. You know what else gets the job done? PropSwap gets the job done. We are brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Find the best odds on MLB futures when you buy directly from other bettors on PropSwap. See a ticket you like, but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair, then buy it. Every ticket purchase on PropSwap can be resold at any time with one click of a button, and PropSwap gives you a suggested price tool to let you know how much your ticket is worth. Do I have to read this part, Dan, about NBA?
I'm sorry, man.
All right, fine. A few weeks ago, a PropSwap customer sold a $500 40-1 Phoenix Suns championship ticket for $16,000 after the Suns went up 2-0 in the finals. How did that work out? A 30 times return for the seller and adjusted odds of minus 400 for the buyer when every sportsbook in the country had Suns at minus 500. NBA's stupid, though. I don't like the NBA anymore. I like PropSwap, though. With PropSwap, your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. Think of it like the stock market, but for sports betting. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. MMA is not dumb, though. I like MMA still. Let's move on. Bantamweight, Julio Arce, Andre Ewell. Mr. Highlight is Andre Ewell's nickname, and he's the only one with a nickname, so he wins, obviously. Let's break down Mr. Highlight. He's 17-7 with 7 knockouts, 4 submissions, 4-3 in the UFC. He lost his last fight. He won 2 straight before that. He also was a pro boxer before this, where he went sparkling 0-4. He's got an inch of height, 5 inches of reach on Arce. He's plus 160. Arce, 16-4, 4 knockouts, 5 submissions, 3-2 in the UFC. He's swapped wins and losses back and forth over the last 4 fights, and he lost his last fight. So if you're playing the pattern here, he should win this one. Last fight was way back in November 2019. I think he had a bunch of injuries, did he not?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
He had a bunch of injuries and had to pull out of a fight with. I know he only had one booked in that time. That's how bad the injuries were, too. It's just Timur Valiev. Yeah.
Okay, right. 1-0 in the Contender Series, year younger, grappling stats in his favor, minus 200. Break it down, Mr. Vreeland.
So I'm just going to say straight up front, I really like Julio Arce in this fight. This is one of the ones I kind of had to like talk myself back and forth on.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cause like he's got a long layoff, right? Like that's the scary thing. But he hasn't fought since he fought Hidalgo. Who's really good, by the way. Hakeem Dawodow is, you know, his only loss came to Movsar Abdullayev. You know, he had that fight with Shaman Marais, which, of course, is his other loss. Shaman Marais, I think, is a lot better than people gave him credit for, too. And both of those two losses in the UFC so far were split decisions. You know, I don't think he deserved the split against Dawodow. I think I had Dawodow winning that pretty easily. But I do think he probably won that fight with Marais, and we'd be talking about him with a crazy good record if we switched that one over to a win. He'd be 4-1, and his only loss would be to Dawodow, and he's beat Dan Ige, which I think people forget, too. Like, he not only beat Dan Ige, he out-wrestled him. And the really interesting thing about this is I think his striking is a little bit more powerful and maybe even possibly a little more technical than Andre Yule here. And if either of them is going to try to take it to the ground, it's really going to be Arce who's got the advantage there. So, like, I think Yule is kind of without a path to victory here. I don't see him subbing him. I don't see him knocking him out. I think his only way to win here is to kind of, like, dance and point fight. And with Arce's aggression, I just don't see that happening either. So, yeah, I'm big on Julio Arce here. I think this one should be a pretty easy one for him.
There you go. Arce is the pick. I know we've got to highlight, any of the people we talked about so far have been on the Top Turtle podcast, so we need to know that for the jinx.
Let's see, Jari Eubanks has,
No.
Have I talked to Andre Yule? I don't think Andre Yule has. I think I booked one with him and then didn't have, Hannah Goldie? No, I interviewed her opponent, Kaylee Robbins. Just Sarge. Yeah.
Okay. How about Randy Costa or Adrian Yanez?
Both of them.
Yes. Okay. Well, I canceled that one. Good. Now, they're having some weird, like, Twitter feud, not really a feud, over what? It's like peanut butter cups and Dr. Pepper or something strange? Have you caught on to that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they have, like, a gentleman's bet about it that, the loser has to buy the winner a month's supply of the other one.
Fantastic.
If Randy Costa wins, Yanez has to buy him a month's supply of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which I don't know what a month's supply of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are. But
zero?
I bet you Randy Costa could put him away, though, because that dude's hilarious when he's not in fight camp with what he eats and otherwise puts in his body. I once asked him during the pandemic, I interviewed him, and I was like, you know, how much are you able to get ready? Because he had just flown to Florida to live at his parents' condo in Florida or something like that. And I was like, how much are you getting ready? Are you, like, working out on the beach? And he goes, I've been working my liver so hard. Yeah, so he's, like, the type of guy who can put some stuff away. And then I don't know how many Dr. Peppers Yanez drinks when he's not in camp, but a month's supply, I assume, could be, like, I don't know, do you drink one a day? 30? That's a lot.
Yeah, that is. Wow. Healthy athletes, these guys. Anyhow, so it's a good-natured Twitter feud. No one's threatening to kill the other's family in their sleep or anything, but like the big shots in MMA do, so it's nice to see. So Costa's anyone with a nickname, which is the Zohan, which is kind of funny because we were talking, like, an obscure Adam Sandler. That movie's obscure, right? I don't think that's what the Zohan
is. It's like the worst Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah. But he does look like the Zohan, so hey, it works.
He does.
It works. All right, let's break him down first. He's 6-1, 6 knockouts. He's a finisher. He's 2-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights, both via some form of knockout or TKO. He's got 2 inches of height, 3 inches of reach. Striking and active striking stats in his favor. He's at +175. Yanez, 13-3. 8 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. 2-0 in the UFC, both of them via knockout. One of them a head kick knockout, I believe. He's 1-0 on the Contender Series. He's won 6 straight fights. 1-0 in Bellator. He's at -225. I kind of like Costa, but I don't know. This is one of the ones I'm wavering on. Are you gonna sell me on Costa or not?
So you know what? I don't know if this talk will sell you on Costa or not, but I'm going to pick Costa largely based on the price.
Yeah, okay.
The fact, I think this fight is pretty darn close.
Right.
You know, I've wavered back and forth on who I would pick in a straight-up fight here. So if the odds are Costa, and what did you say that official number was that we're using?
+175 is what we're using for Costa.
+175. I've actually seen it as high as almost +200. Like, I like that number for Costa because here's the thing. If this is a technical striking match, if Yanez decides to go in there and try to, you know, pick his shots and style on Randy Costa, I think he wins. And I think he wins pretty easily. But I think a lot of this buildup, we just keep hearing, like, we're going to go in there and fucking brawl. And if you go in there and brawl with Randy Costa, he can knock you out. And he will knock you out. So I actually think a brawl favors Randy Costa instead of Yanez. So, you know, the question you have to ask yourself is how much of this is talk, you know, that Yanez is just trying to build up the fight. You know, how much of it is him being kind of like a younger, more immature guy who, you know, doesn't have a ton of fights and thinks he can just go in there and do that with this guy? Because his striking is phenomenal. Both of them are amazing strikers and have incredible power for their size. But I think at the end of the day, like, I think it's going to be enough of a brawl that Costa could catch him. And at plus 175, I think the money is there to take the underdog in this one.
All right, we're on the same page once again. Yeah, for bantamweights, these guys really have dynamite in their limbs. All right, so we're going with, that would be Peanut Butter Cups then, right? That's the side that we're on?
Yeah, okay. Yes, I believe we just took Peanut Butter Cups. Yes.
All right, I'm comfortable with that. Middleweights, Nasruddin Imavov versus Ian Heinisch. Heinisch, the veteran of Rikers Island. I forgot all about that, he was in Rikers Island in jail. Yeah. Wild.
That's a great story, by the way, if you've not.
He was on your podcast, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Was he on your podcast and talked about it?
Yeah, he told that whole story. Plus, you can read it on the Players Tribune. He wrote it up himself, and it's a hell of a read. If you haven't read that, definitely look up, I can't even remember what it was called, but it's Ian Heinisch's piece on the Players Tribune.
Right. So he's been on your show. Imavov is not, right?
No, I don't know.
Okay,
good. I don't know that Imavov has speaks English.
Yeah, does he speak? Yeah, where's he from?
He's Russian, but I think he. So I think he's, and I think we've had this conversation before. I think
maybe.
I think he is. He's born in Russia, but trains out of France and waves a French flag.
Okay, yeah, because that's kind of a French name, or maybe I knew he was. Had some kind of French connection, possibly. But, yeah, it says he's out of Paris, France. But, yeah, he may not have been bored there. All right. Let's break him down first. 9-3, three knockouts, four submissions. He's 1-1 in the UFC. He lost his last fight after winning his debut. He will be the much larger man here, 4 inches of height, 3 inches of reach. He's also 7 years younger. He's got striking and the active striking stats in his favor. For active striking, meaning he lands more strikes, and for other striking in general, I compare them in strikes landed, strikes absorbed, and then their accuracy and their accuracy at defending strikes. So for the new listeners on there, grappling is basically the same except for grappling stats. All right, so anyhow, he's got striking and active striking stats in his favor, plus 120. Heinisch, the Hurricane, is 14-4 with 5 knockouts, 2 submissions, 3-3 in the UFC, lost his last fight. He has won 1 of his last 4. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He also was an LFA champion at middleweight, I believe. He also was 1-0 in the World Series of Fighting, which is now PFL. Grappling stats in his favor. He's at minus 150. Where are you going with this one?
I'm going to take Imavov in this one, actually.
Wow, me too. Weird.
Yeah, it's weird if you keep picking the same thing. So,
and the underdogs who keep picking, too.
Yeah, well, it worked out for us last week with Billy Q and Sergey Morozov. So we went 2-for-2 on underdogs. But look, here's the reason I like him. You mentioned the long reach, right, and that being a big difference. If you look at the guys that Heinisch has fought so far, he has not fought anybody even close to looking like Imavov, right? Like, you look, it's Gerald Meerschaert, it's Calvin Gastelum, it's Derek Brunson, it's, yeah, I guess Derek Brunson's got longer arms, but, like, all of these guys are, like, wrestler-boxer types. Nobody is, like, a kickboxer from the outside with phenomenal footwork, and on top of that has the reach advantage. So I've always liked the way Imavov picks people off from the outside. I like the way he moves. You know, I picked him to beat Phil Hawes in his last fight, and he definitely lost rounds 1 and 2 by just being controlled. But in round 3, you know, one judge had it a 10-8 and had it going to draw. You know, a lot of people had it that way and thought it was a draw. You know, I think Hawes probably, you know, winning the first 2 rounds did enough to at least earn a draw or beat him, but this is a guy who's been in with really tough wrestler types like Phil Hawes and hung around and got the better of him as the fight went on. And Look, I don't see Ian Heinisch being able to tag him and get him out. I don't think Heinisch's wrestling is good enough to get him out. And, man, if he's going to fight three rounds of a kickboxing match with a dude whose nickname is the Sniper, I don't see that going well for Heinisch. So, yeah, I like Imavov, and I like him quite a bit in this fight.
Did I miss his nickname? He's the Sniper? I don't think I saw that.
He's the Sniper. Maybe the maybe the Russian Sniper.
Oh, since you're pinning him down as being Russian, even
I think it is the Russian Sniper, though. You might want to look it up.
All right, that's fine. Well, we're both picking Imavov. We've notched each other so far. We'll see if Dan makes a dumb pick coming up and ensures a win for me or not. We'll see. We got one more fight on the prelims, and then we will move on to the main card. So the main event of the prelims is a middleweight fight. Is it Punahele Soriano versus Brendan Allen, who I mistakenly said you were all in for, which is actually his nickname too, but then you really are all in for him too, aren't you? You're a Brendan Allen fan, I believe.
I really like watching Brendan Allen fight. Yeah.
I got him confused with, I got him and Sean Brady mixed up.
I do not feel the same way about him as I do Sean Brady. I very much like Sean Brady much more.
He hurts Sean Brady big time. All right, nicknames, Storytime Soriano or All In Allen. So they're both similar plays on their last name. Very interesting. I think Storytime I like better, but they both work because, like I said, they're fun little plays on the last name.
Yeah, I don't particularly care for either of them, but yeah, sure.
Well, screw you then. Screw you, Dan. Oh, yeah, is there anyone on – we'll get to that, actually. There is someone on this card that you hate. We'll get to her in a little bit. We'll get to her in a little bit. That's another thing I want to do. We have to talk about who's been on the podcast and who you hate and want to see get their face smashed in. But I know who that is. That's coming up. Have we gone by anyone that you hate that you want to see get beat up so far or no?
No, I actually – it's like a shame to pick against some of these people.
True.
I hate picking against Adrian Yanez. I love Adrian Yanez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Andre Ewell quite a bit. Ian Hein is just like a super nice guy to talk to. So, yeah, it hurts to pick against some of these guys. But, yeah, won't later.
No. Was Allen on the Top Turtle podcast? I think he was.
I don't think I've ever talked to Brendan Allen.
Or Soriano?
Storytime? It's funny. I actually, for a while, was booking interviews through Soriano because he works for... Previously used to work for Ali Abdelaziz and be one of the booking agents for him. So,
really? Oh, nice.
Yeah, Ali used to send me to Pune to book interviews with his fighters, and I didn't know Pune was a fighter, and then he made the UFC, and I was like, oh, it's this guy.
Yeah, there you go. All right, this one basically is a pick 'em on the board. We got -115 for Soriano, -110 for Allen. So it's virtual dead heat there. We'll break down Allen first. He's 16-4, 5 knockouts, 9 submissions, so very well-rounded and very much a finisher. 4-1 in the UFC. He got a sub win his last time in the cage. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series. He also was an LFA champ. I think he was middleweight too, was he not? Yes, he was. We have another back-to-back LFA middleweight champs. In fights here, 3 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, 3 years younger, triple threes. He's -110. And Soriano, 8-0, 5 knockouts, 2 submissions, 2-0 in the UFC, both of them via a form of knockout / TKO. He was 1-0 in the Contender Series also, striking and active striking stats in his favor, -115. I'm going to take Allen. This is another one I have a question mark beside, but I'll take the underdog at -110, Brendan Allen.
I'm going to differ with you on this one.
Oh, okay. You like Brendan Allen, though.
I do really like Brendan Allen, but here's my concern about this fight. When you look at this fight between Soriano and Allen, you know, I think that Brendan Allen is not going to win this fight unless it goes to the floor. You know, and if it goes to the floor, I actually think that Puno probably will lose rounds there, but I don't really think he's in danger of being submitted there. Because I think he's actually very good on the ground himself. But the thing is while it's standing, Puna has incredible power in his hands. He throws absolute trucks at his opponent. And Brendan Allen, you know, he gets hit a fair amount when he's striking. You know, he beat Carl Roberson, but wasn't winning that match on the feet. Sean Strickland absolutely tagged him anytime he wanted striking. I mean, you could even go back to some of his fights with, like, Kyle Daukaus or Kevin Holland. And, like, there were moments where he got tagged by those guys, too. And, like, it's one of those things where if you get hit a lot, that's, sometimes that's fine. Like, you can, you know, your jaw will hold up. But when you're fighting a guy who has the ability to turn the lights off, he's going to hit you once or twice. And I just think Puna is probably going to catch him with a KO somewhere in here.
Yep, very well could happen. He does have striking in his favor for sure, but I'll go differ, and I'll take Allen instead. So, all right, so very, very solid prelims. And we're pretty much on the same page. We found some nice underdogs, hopefully, for y'all to get some plus money. And we will move on to the main card. But first, let's get our last two sponsors out of the way, and then we can go straight through with the ad-free main card. So let's tell you about Underdog. Make sure to head over to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for a free $25. That's right. Sign up for free, $25, and you get a shot. They have $1 million contest on right now. So make sure you head over there, download the app, sign up on underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And while you're downloading apps, if you haven't already, make sure you download the SGPN app. We have our very own app. We are live in the App Store and Google Play Store. The app gives you easy access to all our picks and podcasts, and you can get notifications pop up on your phone every time a podcast drops. And don't forget to toss us an app review and download the SGPN app today. All right, let's go main card. This gentleman was on Dan's podcast, Top Turtle Podcast, last week. That would be Jordan Williams in a welterweight fight against Mickey Gall. I don't think Mickey Gall has ever been on your podcast, right? So Williams is the only one with the stink on him?
Yes, I believe... I believe I've never had Mickey Gall on, but I've had a few of his opponents on.
Mickey Gall, famous from the CM Punk fight, is now 6-3 in the UFC with 5 submission wins. Not 6-3 UFC, excuse me, as a pro, 5 submission wins. He is 5-3 in the UFC. Pretty much all his fights except one were in the UFC. He lost his last fight. He has actually swapped wins and losses back and forth. We got loss, win, loss, win, loss. So it's been 5 straight fights for that. So I guess he's due for a win, if you believe in that. He's been out of action since June of 2020. He's got an inch of height and he's 2 years younger than Williams. He's at plus 150. Williams, nicknamed Bomaye, is that right? Bomaye?
I think it's Bumbaye, right? Isn't it?
Bumbaye, really? It's not spelled that way, but okay.
But isn't it the...
Oh, it's true. Ali thing, right?
Yeah, it's the Ali thing. Yeah. I think. Yeah. I could be wrong.
Yeah. You should have asked him, Dan. You had him on your show last week. Everyone should listen. That's a very entertaining interview with Mr. Williams. So you should listen to Top Turtle every week, though. All right, we'll go with Mr. Ali here. He's 9-4 with 1 no contest, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. As a pro, he's been knocked out himself twice, but Mickey Gall is not a knockout artist. He is 0-1 in the UFC, 1-1 with 1 no contest in Dana White Contender Series. He won the no contest fight, but then he got caught with weed in the system, which is illegal now, but it wasn't legal back then. So he was 2-0 in Bellator before all of this. He's got an inch of reach. He's twice as more active a striker than Mickey Gall, minus 190. I'm going to have to take Williams in this one, despite the Top Turtle curse hanging over his head.
Yeah, I think Williams is the right pick here. By the way, Bumaye is a Bantu word meaning kill him, which is...
Really?
Yeah. That's
very
pretty,
nice.
That's pretty brutal.
He sounded pretty chill on your podcast. It's not very nice.
Yeah, that's pretty violent, which is, I guess, makes sense with the Ali Bumaye
right,
too.
Right.
Yeah, it means Ali kill him, Ali kill... Yeah, no, that's kind of funny. All right, so let's talk about the actual fight itself. Look... I'll be real honest about Mickey Gall. I was high on him as a prospect when he first came out, but I think more and more we've seen from him, the more and more obvious it is that he's going to just get beat by guys who don't let him take them down, and because anybody, just about anybody boxes better than him, right? Like Mike Perry, who got absolutely pieced the hell up against Daniel Rodriguez, had no problem outboxing Mickey Gall. You know, Diego Sanchez took it to him. Like, I mean, like, as long as he can't take you down, I don't think he's a threat. And look, Jordan Williams has got an amateur wrestling background, right? Like, he was a JUCO wrestler. So, like, he's got the wrestling background to stuff the takedowns. Plus, he's coming down from 185 to 170, so he's getting bigger. He's going to be stronger, finally. And look, he's got good boxing in his own right, too. He knocked out Gregory Rodriguez, who's now 1-0 in the UFC, to get his contract in the Contender Series. His only loss comes to Imavov, who kind of picked him apart from the outside. like I said, you know, Imavov really has the ability to do. So, you know, I think that here with Jordan Williams, you can just sort of expect that he's going to stuff the Mickey Gall takedowns, blast him on the feet, and either win a very easy decision or probably get a late stoppage.
There you go. I agree. Yeah, Mickey Gall has not progressed the way a lot of us have hoped. And he's 29 already, too, so it's not like he's a young buck at this point. When he has nine fights under his belt still, too, at this point. Moving on, a couple of young bucks in women's flyweight. Miranda Maverick, Fear the Maverick is the nickname, versus Macy the Future Barber. We got to go with Fear, though, obviously, because Macy Barber's nickname's a lie.
Yeah, well, not only is it a lie, but also when you say it that as the middle part of her name, it almost sounds like both that and her last name are the nickname together. It's Macy, the Future Barber.
Well, you never know. After this fight, that may be the case.
Yeah.
Dan, do you like Macy Barber, Dan?
I'm not a Macy Barber fan. Look, I haven't been shy about this either. When you're the type of fighter who comes out and says you're going to be the youngest champion ever, and if that's a career aspiration, that's fine. Right? Like, that's something you want to do, that's fine. But, like, she made it part of her persona that she was going to be the future champion. Then she gets her ass kicked by Roxanne Modafferi, blames it on an injury, and steals Roxy's mic time. Like, you don't take a mic from freaking Roxanne Modafferi. You also don't get an interview in a loss when you fight. You're an unranked flyweight fighting Roxanne Modafferi. You just don't get an interview in a loss, but she, like, managed to, like, take the mic. Not a fan of that.
No. No, plus, let's break it down, and then we'll see what we think about her game. Well, Macy Barber first, 8-2 with 5 knockouts, 2 submissions. She's never been finished in a fight, even though she got injured badly against Roxanne Modafferi. She gutted it out. Can't question her toughness for sure. She's 3-2 in the UFC. She won her first 3, and then she lost her last 2. She was 1-0 in the Contender Series. She's 2 inches taller than Miranda Maverick. She's at plus 120. Ms. Fear the Maverick, who was also on Top Turtle last week, another good interview. She's 9-2 with 1 knockout, 5 submissions. She also has never been finished. She's 2-0 in the UFC. She's won 5 straight fights. She was 6-2 in Invicta before this. She also won the Invicta Flyweight Tournament. So you can add a couple more wins to that if you want to make her 8-2 in Invicta. Striking and active striking stats in her favor, minus 150. I got to Fear the Maverick in this one.
Yeah, I think this is an easy one. Look, Macy Barber looks good in certain aspects of her game. She kind of reminds me of Mickey Gall in that she didn't progress. And the difference here is that she seems mostly hopeless if you take her down. She doesn't really, she has ideas off of her back. She looks like it's pretty easy to hold her there. And she just so happens to be fighting maybe the best wrestler at flyweight. And Miranda Maverick, somebody who's just as young as her, 20 times more powerful than her, and has 80 times better wrestling than her. Like, she's just gonna bulldoze Macy Barber wherever she wants, and I would not be surprised in the slightest if she was the first person to stop Macy Barber.
No, me neither. So, and she's, all the talk about the future, she's the same age as Macy Barber, so, yeah, I like what she said on your other podcast about how UFC's really doing a poor job at women's flyweight. They're matching up all the young up-and-comers with each other, and there's so many, like, older fighters who should be put in gatekeeper roles, and they don't seem to be doing that for some reason.
Yeah, and just if you look at Miranda Maverick, she's fought Leanna Jojua, who's young, Jillian Robertson, who's young, and now Macy Barber. Like, she's fought three women in her first 3 fights that are going to be all under 25 at the time of the fight. That is really incredible, especially because she's young herself.
Yeah, I know. It's strange matchmaking, but hey. Moving on, is there anyone else that you hate that I don't know about coming up, or can we move on? Anybody else you want to see smashed in?
There's one more, but we'll get to it.
Oh, okay. Really? Wow, Dan has got a lot. He seems like a nice, mild-mannered guy, but he's got a lot of... There's a lot of anger there and a lot of scary images on his phone. So let's move on to featherweights. Darren Elkins, Darren the Damage Elkins, as his tattoo says prominently, versus Derek Minor, who has no nickname. So I guess we can. No,
you would
I'm going with Minor.
No, you have to pick the damage over everybody else in the UFC because of the tattoo.
It's true. The horrible bubbling.
The only tattoo that looks better than Brock Lesnar's big short tattoo.
If you don't know, everyone, just Google it quickly. Darren Elkins tattoo. It's very nice. But yeah, I'm still hung up. I like the future barber. That's very, very good. I never thought of that she's going to be a barber coming up. Anyhow, I guess I better move on. The damage. Let's break down the damage first. He's 25-9, 8 knockouts, 5 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times in his career, which isn't a heck of a lot since he's been in 34 fights. He's 15-8 in the UFC. He made his debut in 2010. Dan, what were you doing in 2010? It's another game I like to
play. I was in college.
Okay.
I was throwing sub replacement level relief pitch innings in Division III college.
Awesome. He made his pro debut in 2007. What were you doing in 2007, Dan?
I was depending on the time, I was still in high school.
And what were you doing there? You were playing catcher, were you not?
Yeah, I was the Jeff Mathis of high school catching in Massachusetts.
you lost me on that. That went over my head.
Jeff Mathis bats about 130 every year.
Okay, yeah.
Plays good defense and catches on somewhere.
There you go. That's you. So anyhow, he's been around a long time is what I'm getting at, Darren Elkins. 2010 in the UFC, 2007 as a pro. His last win was a sub win, which was his last fight. He had lost 4 straight before that, so he's won 1 of his last 5. 2 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, more active striker, plus 130. Derek Minor, 26-11, 1 knockout, 22 submissions. So you know what he's going for here. He's also lost himself 8 times via submission. You don't see records like this very often. This is very, very strange. 2-1 in the UFC. He's won his last 2 fights after dropping his debut. He was 0-1 on the Contender Series. 6 years younger. Grappling stats in his favor, not surprisingly. Minus 165. Break it down.
I think I'm going to go with Elkins. Is this crazy?
Really?
Yeah, I think. So, listen, Minor surprised me last time out in beating Charles Rosa. But I think what I've gleaned from that in the aftermath is what we've learned about Charles Rosa in his fight both with Minor and with Bryce Mitchell is that his grappling is good. He's a good grappler, but his wrestling had not been good. It picked back up against Justin James. I interviewed him, and he said he refocused on it. But I think I saw that fight with Minor, and I was like, man, look at this dude. He's much better than I thought he was. I don't really expect him to be able to take Elkins down or to even maybe want to take Elkins down because Elkins has got good submissions, right? Like,
yep.
I think people forget the dude subbed Michael Johnson, which is not a bad win. You know, he subbed Eduardo Garrigori last time out, but that is what it is. You know, he stopped Ryan Hall from going to the ground with him and just striked with Uriah Hall. I don't think Minor is particularly a great striker, and if he can't get Elkins down, like, I don't mind the dog money here on Elkins.
Yeah, I think you've swung me in that favor, too. It makes the path to victory is much clearer, obviously, for Elkins than Minor's. Elkins doesn't get tapped out, so how's he going to win the fight?
And he also doesn't get tired, right? Like,
yeah.
The Mirsad-Bechtsik fight, I just go back to time and time and time and time and time again. Because, dude, Elkins took one of the most savage beatings for like 14 minutes in that fight, and he was still there to score the upset with a minute left. Like, dude, Elkins is just an absolute tank. You know, wins or losses aside, you know, you can look back at all that record and say, you know, well, Ricardo Lamas got him out of there. But for the most part, dude, that dude is there for the whole fight every time.
But have you interviewed either of these men? I forgot to ask.
Nope, I think no.
All right, we're good then. Elkins is the pick. We'll agree on it. I know you've interviewed the next fellow, the ultimate bro, Kyler Phillips, who's fighting a bantamweight fight against Holian Paiva. You haven't had him on before.
Paiva. No, I don't think so.
Okay, this may change things for me then. I call him the ultimate bro, but he's really the Matrix, Kyler Phillips. And the other gentleman who does not have a nickname, Paiva, as Dan says. Or did you say Paiva? I can't remember. I already forget what you said.
It's Paiva, I believe.
Paiva. Okay. And it's Holian, right?
Holian? Yeah, I assume Holian. You say that the R is an H because he's Brazilian. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right, he's 20-3, no matter how you pronounce his name. He is 23. He's got 4 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's 2-2 in the UFC. He dropped his first 2 of them 1-2 straight. He missed weight his last fight, though. That was last summer, July of 2020, so he's been out of the cage for a year, and that was at flyweight. So he is moving on up. Actually, most of his fights were at flyweight, at least in the UFC, right?
I believe. All of them have been so far.
All of them were? Okay. Yeah, he fought bantamweight earlier in his career, but not in the UFC. So that's something to keep in mind. He's moving on up here, which I think he may be forced to because he missed weight. And I think he was supposed to fight recently, and he missed weight there too, and was at, he had health issues too, I believe. Am I right with that?
Yeah, he's had a couple of fights canceled recently, yeah. I think one of them was a botched weight cut.
Okay, so he's going up in weight. He's also taking this on short notice, so maybe that's one of the reasons why he's willing to take it at a higher weight class. He was also on the Contender Series where he was 1-0. He's at +215. The Matrix, Kyler Phillips, 9-1 with 5 knockouts, 1 submission, never been finished in a fight, 3-0 in the UFC, 1-0 in the Contender Series, 3 inches taller, striking and active striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, -280, he's the slam dunk pick for me.
Yeah, it's not even close. And I like Paiva, but like, look, if you got outstruck by Kai Kara France and, you know, Rogerio Bontorin tagged you up enough to get a doctor stoppage, like, Kyler Phillips is going to mess you up on the feet. And I would also say this, you know, Paiva did a really good job of countering the wrestling of Shalgas Shumagulov and who the other guy he beat to was like a wrestlery type. Oh, Mark De La Rosa. But like Kyler Phillips surprisingly has incredible takedowns and grappling that I think people sleep on. So, you know, even if Paiva manages to stick with him on the feet, I think Phillips beats him anywhere he wants to in this fight.
Yes. Will he take him to the Matrix, Dan? He loves making all the Matrix references.
Make him take the red pill, doesn't he?
Seen those movies. I've never seen any of the Matrix
movies. You know,
movies.
It's funny that you say that. Neither have I. I've seen zero total Matrix movies. So let's make a couple more. Let's make a couple more Matrix references and pretend we have.
Neo. I know. I think his name's Neo, right? And it's Keanu Reeves.
Not Forrest Whitaker.
Keanu Reeves, the Canadian. Bill and Ted?
Sure, it's Bill and Ted. Do you know if it's Bill or Ted?
I have to ask my son now, because I always forget which one's which. But anyhow, I just figured out who you hate. Yes, he's coming up very shortly.
Yeah, it was a lot easier than anticipated, I feel.
Very easy, yes. I'm like, of course. All right, usually you like lovable. Usually you like to hate lovable fan favorites, so that's why I got thrown off there a bit. So, all right, another weird UFC women's booking. This is in women's bantamweight. They got two young up-and-comers going against each other, Aspen Ladd and Macy Chason. You'd think in a division that Amanda Nunes needs fresh meat constantly in, you'd think they would keep these up-and-comers separate from one another, but regardless, they are putting them up against each other. So no nicknames. These women do not need nicknames. Macy Chason is 7-1 with 2 knockouts, 2 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 5-1 in the UFC. She's won 2 straight. She was 2-0 in the Ultimate Fighter House and won the Ultimate Fighter Championship the season she was on. She also was in Invicta where she's 1-0. She's 5 inches taller and got 6 inches of reach on Aspen Ladd. She's at +155. Aspen Ladd is 9-1, 6 knockouts, 1 submission. She's 4-1 in the UFC. She won via TKO, but that was her last fight. That was way back December 2019. I mentioned that, but the stats have gotten even stronger for people who have had at least a year out of the cage. We're up to 55%, 39-32 for people who have been out of the cage for over a year. So maybe ring rust really is a lie, but I bring it up regardless every time. She was 5-0 in Invicta before she came to the UFC. She's 4 years younger than Chason, striking and active striking stats in favor, grappling stats in her favor, -195. I don't like to pick against either lady, but I'm going to take Aspen Ladd in this one.
Yeah, I think this is also kind of an easy one. You know, kind of similar to the one we talked about just a second ago with Mickey Gall and Jordan Williams. I like Macy Chason a lot. I think she's got good grappling. I like her stand-up. But the problem is here is I think Aspen Ladd is going to choose where this fight happens. You know, Macy Chason got taken down a couple of times by Lena Landsberg, who is, you know, just a kickboxer, really. Like, she's even, you know, she was a professional kickboxer beforehand. People have knocked her for not doing enough with her grappling, and she out-grappled Macy Chason. And not that Chaisson doesn't have good submissions and doesn't have good offensive grappling, but I just don't think the defensive grappling is there enough to stop Ladd. So I think Ladd keeps us on the feet as long as she's comfortable there, but if she does run into trouble, I think she controls this fight pretty easily wherever she wants. So, yeah, I'm big on Ladd in this fight, too.
I think Chaisson was out-grappled by someone else, too, that I was surprised when I was looking her up. I can't remember who it was.
That's when she got... Was it that she gave up takedowns to Marion Renault? I think she gave up multiple takedowns to Marion Renault.
I think that may have been it, yeah, is not something you would expect. So do you agree that you wish they wouldn't be booking it like this, that Amanda Nunes needs, like, young up-and-comers, so, like, why don't we build these people in separate silos and then just keep feeding them to the beast instead of having them run up against each other?
I think so, to an extent. I would say that Macy Chaisson is kind of not – I wouldn't necessarily consider her a young prospect anymore. She's young in her career, but she is almost 30.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, I think the UFC is sort of coming to a point where they're like, she needs to start making a run or she's not ready. She's never going to be a title challenger. And I think they see this as a very winnable fight for Aspen Ladd, who also just happens to be, I think, incredibly marketable for them. You know, like, she's like a shy, every looking girl with her, like, dog, and she goes hiking all the time, and, like, the UFC, I think, just thinks they can hype the hell out of her in the long run. So, like, I think they see this as a winnable fight to one of their most marketable potential title challengers at 35.
Yeah, maybe. I just would rather them have them fight veterans rather than each other, but hey, what can I say? Let's move on to the main event. Bantamweights, 5 rounds, Corey Sandhagen versus that lovable scamp, TJ Dillashaw. That's who Dan and the rest of the world don't like, is that lovable scamp, TJ Dillashaw. That smug, like, his photo, if you guys haven't seen it yet, look up the fight poster. You've seen his smug smirk on the poster, I take it, Dan?
Yeah, it's kind of annoying. I'm looking at it on Tapology right now, and it's pretty irritating.
Yeah. Yes, he's back from his EPO suspension. He claims it didn't help him, though, which is why you take PEDs, because they don't help you, right? That makes total sense.
I'll also say this, too. Like, while I hate that, like, he's used his media day to be like, it wasn't really that helpful, and I'm going to prove it. First of all, regardless of how well you do, it doesn't prove anything. Like, you'll never prove that your entire career wasn't enhanced by the performance enhancers you were taking. And second of all, I'm kind of bummed at how much the UFC is trying to, like, hype his comeback as, like, he had such a hard time being away. And it's like, yeah, well, he should have. He was taking rocket fuel. Like, come on, man. Yep. Like, I very much, you know, I never was a TJ Dillashaw, like, fan. Like, I rooted for Cruz in their first fight, and I actually was hoping Cody Garbrandt would knock him out, and he didn't, obviously. But, I've never been a fan of TJ Dillashaw, but, like, this most recent stuff puts a real bad taste in your mouth.
And it's not like this was a huge shock either when he got busted. Like, people, like, teammates in his own camp would talk about his PED use in the past. So you can't really, it wasn't a shock when he got busted, and you can't really believe that was the only time he's been on stuff. So a reason bringing this up is that's something you got to keep in mind. We may have never seen him clean in the cage. This could be the first time we've seen him clean in the cage, and he's 35 very light weight class, bantamweight, and he's been off 10 and a half years. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think that it's all worth considering. With that being said...
Oh, no! Dan's going to... let's break it down.
Yeah, you break it down.
Cliffhanger. Dillashaw is 16-4 with 8 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out twice himself. He's 12-4 in the UFC. He is 4-1 over his last 5. He lost his last fight. That was 2.5 years ago. He was the UFC bantamweight champion twice. He was 3-0 in the Ultimate Fighter, but then lost in the finals. Grappling stats in his favor, +155. Corey, the Sandman Sandhagen. Also, Corey Twinkletoe Sandhagen, which I much prefer. He's 14-2 with 6 knockouts, 3 submissions. 7-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights via some form of knockout or TKO. He's 5 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, 6 years younger. He's a more active striker. He's at -195. This is one of the fights I have a question mark beside, though, despite all I said about TJ Dillashaw. I'm leaning towards Sanhagen, but I'm not positive, and Dan, I'm thinking, is going to maybe convince me to go to the dark side here.
So I was about to say this, and then I got cut off, and I didn't say it. But I will say this. If TJ Dillashaw looks like the TJ Dillashaw who fought Cody Garbrandt, I do believe he should beat Corey Sanhagen.
Oh, he beats everyone, basically.
I think that's a tough one to beat. There's just so many questions about whether or not he's that guy, right? Like, because the time off, the EPO not being in his system, the fact that he had that time where he took a weight cut down to 125 pounds, had his head bounced around by Henry Cejudo, and as we talked about with concussions, they're cumulative. He may be easier to knock out for the rest of his life now because of that Henry Cejudo knockout. So all of that stuff plays into this. Now, I'm going to pick Corey Sanhagen. I'm going to say that that's my pick. But I will say, when you look at these odds, I think the number next to TJ's name has a lot more value to it than Corey Sanhagen's. Looking at a number that high for a dude who has been that good in the past, I think is just, like, it's very enticing. You know, it's very interesting. I'm going to say, ultimately, I do think, you know, if I have to make a pick straight up, I like Sanhagen in this one because they don't have all those unknowns. With the exception of that one Aljamain Sterling fight, he's looked like an absolute world beater. His striking looks like it improved. He's got the knees. He's got the reach. He's got a lot of things working for him here. And he's a difficult, you know, physical puzzle for just about any, you know, bantamweight in the world, right? Because, you know, he's long. You know, he's built like no other bantamweight right now. So I think TJ Dillashaw is going to have some difficulties with a dude who's 5'11", especially because, you know, the feeling out process is going to be the first time he's had that process in 2 years. He's going to be giving up 5 inches of height. He's going to be giving up, you know, not quite 5 inches of reach, but he's going to be giving up quite a bit of reach. Like, I think Sanhagen is going to get enough success in there that I don't know if he'll knock out TJ Dillashaw, but I do think he'll do enough to win at least 3 of the rounds.
I agree wholeheartedly with all of that. So that put the bow on that. Very, very good fight card.
It's one of the best ones I've seen in some time, top to bottom. As far as stylistic matchups, there is meaningful fights in there too. Like Miranda Maverick wins that fight, she shoots up that division. You know, the winner of Costa Yanez is going to be right knocking on that door at bantamweight. Like, there's some meaningful. Aspen Ladd could, you know, basically punch a title shot at bantamweight with a win, or at least a fight with Holly Holm on a main event of a fight night card, because that's what you get when you win a couple in a row at bantamweight. They're meaningful fights, but all the style matchups are a good time.
Yeah, should be a good time for all. So the Degenerates on our Slack, and I'm supposed to give a shout out to the Triple J crew over on the SGPN Slack and the fights site. That would be Yong or Jong, and who else? Who's the other J's? Joel and Juan, I believe. Anyhow, thanks for listening, guys, and thanks for being true to Jens on the Slack channel. So all those guys always want parlays because they're degens and they want big, big plus money. So do you have any, like, 2, 3, 4, 10 fight parlays here, Dan, that you can give these degenerates?
All right, let's see. If I was to build a parlay, and I'll look at the numbers right now, I think I would start my parlay. We want somebody close to even, but somebody who's going to win. We'll start with Jordan Williams, because Jordan Williams has got a pretty good number by his name. I think we all feel pretty comfortable he's going to beat Mickey Gall. We'll add in Miranda Maverick. That's a really short those are short odds there. You put those two together, you're going to wind up right around plus 170. So I would say if you're going to do a two-leg one, I like those two in there. From there, if I want to get a little bit crazier, I'm going to add Puna Soriano, even though you took Brendan Allen. That'll get you to plus 400. And if you're still feeling too degen, so I'll go Jordan Williams, Miranda Maverick, Puna Soriano. If you're still feeling super degen, I'll add in the Sorodini Moavov. And that'll get you up to 1150, right around there. So almost 1200. That's going to give you 12 to 1. And if you like more than that, you're a crazy person. So
is that good? They are crazy, but is that good enough for you, degenerates? He's giving you plus 1200. How many fights was that for?
Only four.
So I'm only giving four.
You, only four. Okay. So I think you're pretty good on there. You know, you want to – here, we'll go one more. We'll go one more deep if you want. So and I ranked them in order. It's Williams. If you want to add somebody, add Maverick. If you want to add somebody, add Soriano. If you want to add somebody, add Imavov. And I'll add Belbita at the end of it. That'll give us – because that'll give us plus 2,300. That'll give you 23 to 1.
Oh, that's – and we didn't plan this in advance. Did you know I was going to ask you about huge parlay standards, or did you just do that off the top of your head?
If you use – man, wouldn't it be awesome if I was that good at calculating?
I was wondering.
If I'm that good at calculating out the odds of parlays, first of all, my math skills should be used for something else. Which, by the way, I do have a math degree, so that's worth noting. But if you click a button at the top of best fight odds, they calculate parlays for you as you click the odds.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say that that's all my brain, but sadly, no, I let best fight odds do the work for me.
Hey, that's fine enough. All right, let's do a lock. I think you know. Am I first this week? It's been so long. Let's let you have first since you have such a horrible time picking locks.
I'll give you first pick because I have two that I tipped it a little bit in my parlay. I'm just going to take the first or second leg of my parlay, so you can. You can take whoever you want, and I'll take the other one.
All right, let me see. I'm scanning ones that we are on the same page is usually the first good step, and then one that I like the number at. Let's take boom, 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 boom. I could be gutsy and take a plus one, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take Miranda Maverick minus 150.
That's the right one. And I'll take Jordan Williams. I'll take Jordan Williams.
All right.
Jordan Williams over Mickey Gall seems like a pretty easy one for me. And by the way, they were both guests last week on the Top Turtle MMA podcast.
Oh, there you go. Oh, man. What am I doing picking both these people? So who are the – that wraps up this fight card. Who are the guests this week on Top Turtle MMA podcast as you wrap up here?
I talked to Adrian Yanez this week, which is
Mr. Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, Mr. Dr. Pepper, who I actually just picked against, which feels wrong, but I did pick Randy Costa.
Smart move, man.
And then I, outside of the UFC, which I don't go outside of the UFC all that often for interviews, but I did interview this guy, Dre Miley, who's fighting at XMMA 2, which is a promotion that I think not a lot of people know about XMMA because they're only on their second event, but it's being headlined by Ramzy Nijem versus Ben Saunders.
I know those guys.
Yeah, which is like, and if I'm not mistaken, in total, they have, I saw they had 8 UFC fighters, former UFC fighters on the card. Kyle Bochniak is fighting, Marcus Brimage, Justin Scoggins, Will Brooks, Kenny Robertson, Steven Seiler, like just like a whole bunch of UFC guys. But they also have this guy fighting on the prelims named Dre Miley. He's 8-4. He's 3 of his 4 losses have come to guys who are either in the UFC or on the contender series. And he has one eye and is fighting. You know, he's amassed a really impressive 8-4 record with just one eye. So with that being such an interesting story, I thought that was worth getting outside of my usual comfort zone of just interviewing UFC fighters and adding one with him as well.
Oh, very interesting. And you know about all these people, so it's not like it's hard for you to ask pertinent questions because you watch, 3 out of 4 of Elise Reed's fights, for crying out loud.
I did, yeah. I watched a lot of Elise Reed fights.
I don't know if her family could say the same thing, possibly.
Just not her Bellator fights, that's all.
which is the strangest, which would be the easiest one to watch, but maybe not. Bellator's wacky, so. All right, I'm back on the horse. We did it. Hopefully we got you guys some good picks. We, agreed on everything except, 2 or 1? Maybe even 1.
I took Puna and you took Brendan Allen.
Brendan Allen? Yeah.
I think that might have been it.
That's the main event, right, of the prelims?
Did I talk you into taking Darren Elkins? I talked you into taking Darren Elkins.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because the path to victory is much more clearly in his favor, plus – that's a good number beside his name. So,
yeah,
well, that's good. So that means we're going to have another good week then. We're on the same page again. So As for the rest of you degens out there, make sure you follow our picks. You're supposed to bet $100 in every fight. We haven't mentioned that for a few episodes, but that's what true hashtag degens do. So that's what you have to do. $100 in every fight. You won't make money that way, but it's your calling in life as a true degen. You have to do it. You can read all our stuff on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. I'll have my UFC preview going up Thursday morning/afternoon. You can read all our stuff on MMA-manifesto.com. Dan's got an article on Diana Balbita, or what's her new name?
Daniela.
Daniela Balbita. And he will also have the underdog. He's actually already posted. I haven't sent it out on socials yet, but he has the underdog pick on there for you too. So head over to MMA-manifesto.com. Check out you can check out the fight card lineup for this week's event, where you'll have links to a bunch of scouting reports. You'll have the fighters' rankings. I do rankings based on their performances, so I have different rankings than the actual UFC. I have up to the minute betting odds on there, all that stuff. So check out that. And obviously, enter our free pick'em contest. SGPN actually is sponsoring it currently. You get $50 gift card to anywhere in the world that you would like if you win the contest. So. And we get hundreds of people playing. It's lots of fun, so make sure you get in on that. And as I mentioned earlier, our Slack channel is always cooking. We have SGPN Slack has basically channels for everything on there, Olympics, food, liquor, fights, anything you could want as a true hashtag degen. So make sure you find us on Slack. Follow us on Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer, Gumby Vreeland would be his name. What else should I tell them, Dan? And subscribe, obviously, to the MMA Gambling Podcast feed if you haven't already. And download the SGPN app. I think that's all I think I've given them way too much homework. So do you want to take it home this week, Dan, or you want me to?
You've been away for so long. Why don't you take it?
And I forgot to say my nickname. I am and was Juicy J, Jeff Fox, and he is and was Daniel Gumby Vreeland. And we will see you on Sunday, where I will – boast about beating Dan. I'll go 11-1. He'll go 10-2. So talk to you then.